It's March the 23rd, 2024. I'm Chris, and this is The Future of Photography.
The Future of Photography.
Look who's back.
Hello.
Adrian.
Hello.
Back from the shopping wars.
Yeah.
Back. Yes. Yeah, sorry I've missed the last couple of shows. I do miss the shows. I listen to them when I'm not there. It's like, I miss you guys.
That's a good sign.
We had some fun.
We have fun without you.
No, you're supposed to say we miss you too, right?
That's how
this works. Oh, right,
right. It's like a reciprocal thing, right?
Otherwise, we would have had more fun with you.
Oh, bless you. That's so kind of you to say so.
Yes.
So, one reason you weren't around last week was that you had important things going on at the photography show. What's the official title of it now? It's the photography and video show?
It is these days. Yeah, it has been for the last 3 or 4 shows, I think. Although over the years, they all merge into one, of course. So it might be 10 years ago. I couldn't tell you. But yeah, they realized they had loads and loads of video stuff going on. It was like a big section of the show. So they renamed it. But people just still call it the photo show. Nobody ever calls it photography and video show.
So is it okay? So Germany has lost its Fotokina, which used to be on every 4 years, which is a weird kind of frequency, at least in these days. But at one point, it might have been the right frequency. How about the photography show? Is that like changing over time? Is it shrinking? Is it growing? Is it morphing into something else over time?
It's growing, actually. Every year. Although the last one was about 18 months ago, because when COVID kicked in, they had to miss one, and they scheduled one out of the normal window they normally have it. They put one in the autumn instead of the springtime and stuff like that. So, but it's come back to springtime now. And it takes up 2 decent sized exhibition halls in the National Exhibition Centre here in Birmingham in the UK. It's a big event, and the place was packed. I mean, so we're talking about a convention centre here that has 20 odd exhibition floors, right? So we were next door to Arnold Sports World. A lot of bodybuilders.
So there are multiple exhibitions going on at the same time.
There used to be years ago, we used to always be on the same weekend as Comic-Con, which was brilliant because you put a load of photographers in a building with a load of people who love having their photograph taken. And that was awesome. You'd like people just everywhere doing like impromptu photo shoots.
So have there been lots of photo shoots with muscly people this year?
Not so much, I don't think. I think not to comment about what your average photographer looks like, but you know, bodybuilders could possibly be a little intimidating to some of us, at least. I'm sure they're all very friendly people, though.
By the way, did you see, I mean, I probably should have this as a pick of the week, but I've noticed that there is a new show. It may not be available in Europe yet, but I think it's a Nat Geo. I will post it next week. It's about to drop, and it's called Photographer. I think it is
I haven't seen it.
A series, a documentary series, probably very, very well done, well produced on photographers. So we should
have a look at that one.
A little digging and post it as a pick next week. Surprise. Mm.
Yeah, that's cool. No photography TV show, but lots and lots of photographers of all different types and sizes. And in fact, actually, one of the things, I've got 3 items for us. I could have picked 1,000, right? There's so much stuff to see from great talks and presentations, exhibitions of work, technical demos, product demos, all sorts of stuff going on. But I've picked 3, and well, should we dive right in?
Go ahead.
Okay, cool. So the first one is a camera-oriented one, right? So, and this was really good fun. I think we've talked before about the Canon VR lens when it was a prototype. And if you imagine just a normal mirrorless digital camera, but with 2 eyes instead of 1, But they so it's a dual fisheye lens that then records two circular images to the single sensor in the normal mirrorless camera.
Do you know what format it shoots in?
Well, it shoots onto the regular sensor.
But is what I'm saying is the stereo of it, is it MPO?
Haven't a clue. Sorry, and this was there wasn't so much data about that. I mean, we may be available online, but the exciting thing,
Adrian, the hidden question behind my question is:
oh,
can I look at it on my Apple Vision Pro?
I'm pretty sure you can.
So that's a really interesting thing. So, well, this is they had the demo, and this was the important thing. This was the fun bit of it, right? I dropped a couple of photos in our TFOP photo album. One of the camera lens, although there's links in the show notes as well, to the actual product pages on the Canon website. But the fun thing was you got to actually try it, to put the headsets on and see what it was like. So that was interesting. Headsets, they weren't Vision Pro headsets. I don't know what brand of headset they were, to be honest.
Canon.
But do they make their own, do they? I'm not sure.
I've heard
trying to bring up the photos. I can see Meta Quest 3. So
is that what it is? Is it
the white one with the...
Yes. It was definitely a sort of white or off-white colored one. Maybe they were white, and by the time I got to them, they were off-white. Because there were half a dozen of them on the stand, and they were plugged in, and you could literally just wander up and put them on, and it would play the Canon VR, and it was really interesting. So what you saw was video, and it wasn't like a computer interface like the Vision Pro or anything like that. It was just a video playing as the demo, but it was very much a stereoscopic image, and you could move your head around, with the headset on, and it would, do the same. It would move your what you were looking at and things like that in the demo video. It was about hemispherical, so if you turn too far, you could see the black edges of it, which makes sense. I think that the lens is something like a dual 5mm fisheye or something like that, but it's not the type of lens that can look behind itself. So you get about a hemisphere of vision, and it was really quite useful. Useful is possibly not the right best word, but it was shot in a gym, and it was of a martial arts instruction session that. And so there was sort of kicking and punching of the student and then the master or the sensei or the instructor, wandering around, saying, no, do this, do that. And you look around, it was very 3D. Oh, there you go. There's a photo Chris is showing of what it actually looked like. People sat down on the exhibition stand with the headsets on. Meta headsets?
Looks like Meta Quests, yeah.
Can I ask you, do you think that Canon, and this is in the context of the show, felt extremely relevant, slightly relevant, or irrelevant in terms of the big picture of camera manufacturers?
So Canon have, and always do at this show, have by far the biggest amount of floor space, and they bring lots of stuff. So they bring cameras, and they bring everything from consumer point and shoots right the way through their professional gear. They bring lots of printers, including the really big stuff that do require a lot of show floor space. They have their own theater space for presentations. CPS, Canon Professional Services, have a desk there, and you can get your cameras looked after and stuff like that. So very much a big presence, very relevant. If the subtext of your question is, are they majoring on things like cinema and stuff like that, then not so much. There's stuff there. They had some of their movie or cinema cameras on the exhibition stand as well. Slightly
well, certainly, less of that, though. Certainly but, from kind of a prosumer point of view, their printing technology is probably the best at this point in terms of inks, printers, and I'm including obviously HP, but to a lesser extent Epson. And a lot of it has to do with I guess, customer relations and technical support, of which Epson has fallen down the stairs. But Canon has really, really pumped it up. And, I'm in the hunt for a new printer and have been speaking to some people who have a lot of insider information about both Canon and Epson. And there's a consensus about Epson that I feel in terms of my old printers. But Canon always comes out as like number one. This is
interesting.
This is the best. Yeah.
Interesting. So there was lots of staff around from Canon to talk you through the printers and demonstrate things. And they always have a couple of the really big, format printers running so you can see what it's like. There was a lot of Epson presence there as well. In fact, Epson had their own stand. I mean, nowhere near as big as Canon, but they were focused on the printing side. But there was also several Epson resellers there who had Epson printers. But then they also had, there were other, I can't remember what they're called now. There's a company that makes the dye sublimation printers at sort of up to A4 size. There were several resellers for them as well. But no, Canon did feel relevant. Nikon also had a big stand. Sony had a big stand. Neither of them were as big as the Canon one. But Fuji had a big stand that covered all of the X series cameras. So the APS-C series. They had all of the GFX, the medium format ones. They always have a special Instax area as well. And stuff like
that. Your favorite area.
I do like the Instax. I do. Yeah.
Well, how big was their thing about the X106? Because that is really well. Maybe they don't need to drum up anything about it because I've seen this camera hit a real nerve. I've so many people I hear from who ordered it, who are waiting for it, and it's hard to get. And this is one of these YOLO cameras. You have to have it, apparently. Yeah.
It's so that it looks very similar to all the others, which I guess is the point. Yeah. In part, I think the magic with this release is on the inside, isn't it, rather than the outside, from what I've heard and read.
Oh, and the version before was really hard to get, so I think people are now trying to get their foot in the door.
Indeed, and they've moved the manufacturer to China now, so it's no longer made in Japan. It's made in China now. And I think in part that's to try and address the scaling of production. No, it was on the bench. I mean, I guess you guys know what these big logos, lots of pictures, and then you have a long bench with the advisors on one side and the consumers on the other, and you can go and pick up the cameras and play with them and stuff like that. And all the helpers are very helpful and knowledgeable about the product. And the X100 was just sat, along the bench, along with all the other cameras. So they weren't doing a lot special for it for a launch. Loads of good stuff. And the Canon stuff was big and impressive.
Did they have their did they speak about or show anything about their satellite in space? Because they just recently launched their second satellite into space with Canon cameras on board, shooting pictures of the Earth.
No, not that I saw.
Not really. Okay.
No, it was a pretty. I mean it. It's a pretty product focused.
Yeah, stand, I would right? guess so. That space thing is, I think, more of a look what we can do.
They don't
kind
sell
of thing.
A lot of those.
I don't think you will be buying a Canon satellite anytime soon. Yeah.
There's a lot of sales of cameras and lenses and stuff like that on the show floor. So the biggest retailers in the UK all had, apart from one actually, all had. Decent sized stands and tons of stock. Lots of good show deals on absolutely everything.
Who are the big retailers? Is Jessup still around?
Jessup's went bankrupt a few years back and had to shut most of their high street stores. There are still one or two around, but they're smaller. Now, possibly the biggest one, I think, these days is called Warehouse Express, which it has been opening lots of retail stores in the last few years. They They started out with just one store in one part of the country, not in a major city. But they got they were one of the ones that got really big as the online store, the big online store in the UK. And they've since opened stores in several of the big cities. So, you know, retail's making a comeback for camera shops. Another big one, which has been around forever, is called London Camera Exchange, which is a great one for used gear as well as for new. Who's the Camera World, who are a decent size, well, not quite as big as the others, but decent size. They were there. And everybody had a ton of stock and was selling. I even bought something myself. I bought myself a new lens.
Oh, no. What is it?
That is the Fuji 10-24, and it's the Mark II version of that lens, which has I think the old one had stabilization. This one is weather sealed, though. So 10-24, equivalent of a 15-36 on a full frame camera, and it f4 all the way through, which is of course plenty fast enough these days with for most use cases, given how good the sensors are these days. And it's a lens I've been after for ages, and with my Fuji kit I've been trying to slowly, not replace necessarily, although I'm happy to replace lenses, but just to get to a point where the whole kit is weather sealed so I can go out for a walk in the rain or by the beach and stuff like that and not worry too much about it all. Because almost all of my lenses are not weather sealed. So
it's a UK friendly setup.
It is, yeah. So exactly. So it's just there. I mean, you can see here, for those who are watching the video, I'll hold it in front of my face. So this is the Fuji X-T3, which is my main Fuji camera currently, a couple of generations old, of course, but still doing me but very well, with a battery grip and the new 10-24 lens on it, which was £200 off at the show.
There we go.
There you go. Yeah.
Should have bought two.
It was 10
stereo. And recreate that 10 and stereo lens kind of thing.
Just add a little mirror and an adapter.
Yeah. So, there. No, it was good to see. There were loads of really good things there to see, like from a toys point of view.
What was the most surprising thing you saw at the show?
Oh, that's a good question. I was like Dog Lady. So there's a lady who's there every year. Who has a stand and she brings dogs that are very well trained, and she teaches you how to do those photographs where the dog looks like he's trying to lick the camera and stuff like that. And she does all these demos. And of course, what she's doing is putting like peanut butter or something on a sheet of Perspex, and the dog is going, huh? Like that. Yeah. So yeah, to try and lick it off. So she's always good fun seeing the dogs, and they're so well trained, so well behaved, the dog. So that's fun. What was the most surprising thing? I don't know. I might have to come back to you on that one.
Did you feel that there's any kind of overall industry movement towards some technology? That we've seen that in the past, you know what I mean? Whether it's formatting, whether it's chip size, ISO.
So the listeners are going to hate me for saying this, but the industry shift is towards the use of AI.
No surprise
here.
The thing is, this is a very consumer-focused trade show, so it's about showing cameras, showing solutions, things that people can use. Yeah. So yes. I think the innovation part has already happened at that point when they sell them. So I don't know.
But then, so there are lots of stuff on AI. So Adobe had a big stand. They were doing lots of demos, and it was all about the AI componentry in their product set, and not just Photoshop or Lightroom, you know, across the board. Because there's quite a lot of video stuff there as well. Then Luminar had a stand there, only a smallish one. But of course, Luminar editing is all about the AI built into it. A company, I forget the name, but they were selling webcams, and they were like, the webcam follows you around, and it's like, so think like on a little automated gimbal, and it'll follow you, and you can make these days you can make signs with your hands, and then the camera reads that as an instruction to do something different. But even there, it's like, it's all about the AI. I was like, I don't care about the how it does it. What does it do, right? But how good and what can it do for me?
AI sells. They used to put blockchain on things, and now that has been replaced by AI.
Blockchain.com, right?
doesn't even have to have AI in it. It's just important to have it on it.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. So I think that would probably be my thing of what's the trend. There weren't any trends. I mean, you know, drones are just, you know, normal now. No, the drones are not a trend anymore.
Too annoying.
Yeah, action cameras are not a trend anymore. I mean, they're all there, right? Insta360 had a stand, and I'm not sure if I saw a DJI stand this year. Normally DJIs have a stand there. The other thing with perhaps really interesting is the number of third-party lens manufacturers. So Lauer, I can never pronounce that. They had some really great stuff. Siri, the guys that make both anamorphic and normal lenses, they were there. And so there was quite a lot. And Yongnuo, you know, not long since they were the cheapest of the Chinese
That's
brands.
All the Chinese brands you're just listing yeah. there.
It's probably made of one factory makes them all.
They're all, do you know what? They're all now starting to bring out really well-built auto-focusing lenses. Mm. Right. Mm. Yeah. And that's new because, you know, a lot of those companies had, you know, some of them, you know, have produced better quality than others, perhaps. I don't think anybody's going to say that Lauer don't make good quality lenses because they do. Right. And, but they're starting to bring out autofocus lenses now. There was even one stand I walked past, very small, with a couple of, I'm assuming, Chinese people on it, and they literally had a cardboard sign written in marker pen that said, "We are looking for distributors for our product," and they sort of nailed that to their stand.
How was the iPhone adjacent component of the show? Like turn your iPhone.
You mean accessories for iPhone photography?
Yeah, exactly. So that's interesting. So
lenses.
One I saw, which I really liked actually when I saw it, was Snap Grip. Are they called Snap Grip? And they use a magnet. They have like a rubberized grip, and they use the MagSafe.
I own that. It's terrific. It's fantastic because it'll also charge your phone as you go.
Yeah.
There's no issue with kind of connecting it. You just hit the MagSafe and on your buttons do the work, and it's a nice grip and it's easy. There's nothing to do. I got it when I was up shooting, because I needed something to charge it, and B, it's just nice to be able to, you know, snap or take video with, you know, with one hand moving through. That's a product that I quite like.
I was this close to buying one of those. They had the basic grip, but then they do a kit which is like a tabletop tripod, which is also MagSafe and stuff like that. I was very close. I think if the show they had a decent enough show deal, but I think if it had just been like an extra 10 quid off or something, I probably would have gone.
I remember,
I went and bought the big expensive lens. So
I remember I got it on some kind of deal and it was not expensive, and I thought, wow, that's an amazing little piece to have, and I use it. So.
Yeah, no, it's a really nicely put together product. It feels nice in the hand, dead simple to use. You know, you've got a shutter button that works on Bluetooth, a nice grip, and not only that, but as you said, it charges your phone as you go because it's also, you know, it works all through the MagSafe. So yeah, good product that, I think. Now you're giving me remorse, like, well, not buyer's remorse. It's
that's my job.
Not buyer's remorse. Feel bad. Not buyer's remorse. But
it's reverse
anyway,
FOMO.
Yes.
No, delayed FOMO.
Delayed from enough. Anyway, enough about products.
Adrian, just come over, and I'll lend it to you whenever you want.
Yeah, that's very kind of you. Thank you. I'll put it on the shelf for me, right next to the Leica. Yeah. So there's another big thing I wanted to talk about, which I thought was really cool, and is about actual photography, right? So you know, sort of switching gears here now, right? Although the talk about toys is great. What I went to see a presentation and a panel discussion about a thing called felt photography.
Felt as in the fabric or?
Well, spelt the same way, but not the same thing. No. So, felt as in feelings. And the presentation, so it was a panel discussion, which had some photographic artists and also some people who are more from the competition world, the photographic competition world. And the way that the lady pitched this was that, photo competitions are really, very formulaic. They're looking for very specific things and are often quite technical.
We talked about that here, yes.
Yeah, often quite technical. Felt photography has come about from the point of view of, actually, wouldn't it be fantastic if you could curate and maybe even judge and assess photography on the basis of how it makes you feel rather than how, rather than particular technical characteristics. And so the presentation, the panel discussion about how it is that they've done this, they do open calls for curation and publish exhibitions. One of their exhibitions actually had been printed and was on display in the exhibition hall. The discussion was along the lines of, they opened the panel discussion with a lady who is a judge. She had been a judge of photographic competitions for many years, I think she'd said. And she said, often, of course, you have to apply the formula and the criteria and what have you. But she said one of the things about felt photography, she said it just was an amazing thing for her to be able to consider the art in a different way. And to use it as it's actually used in part as therapy. And so she said, the conversation was things like, well, how does this make you feel? How does, not just in your brain and what does it make you think about, but how does it make your body feel when you see and study a particular image? And, what does that do? What does that do then? How your body feels? What does that do to your state of mind? What questions does the photograph raise for you? Or what thoughts does it prompt? Or what feelings does it prompt? And I just sat there and I was listening. I was quite like rapt in attention. Very attentive to this talk.
I have to say I'm rapt listening to you talk about it. I think this is fantastic and a great way to experience photography.
It was. And it just really made me think, it's like, this is, when you hear something, this makes so much more sense than the way we usually do things. It was one of those moments, It was like, it shouldn't be a numbers game. It shouldn't be all about whether you follow the rules or not.
I think that's it provokes even a greater question about art in general, art criticism, analysis, previews, curators talking about the work before one has a chance to digest it and feel what they feel or what one feels. So just drawing attention to that, I think, is a extremely important way for us to look at all kinds of images, but specifically with photography, we don't talk enough about it. We talk a lot about decisive moment, compositional, minimalism, complexity, texture, light, but we rarely talk about the mood, the feeling of it,
and which is great. Arguably what photography is about.
That's the point.
That's what I mean. I sat there thinking, this just really feels right. It really feels like what it should be all about, right? In sharp contrast to all the stuff we've just been talking about the equipment and the toys and the fun, which all of which is great fun as well. But having, wandering around this show floor full of really cool stuff and then walking into this presentation theatre area where this panel discussion was held. It just made a lot of sense. The presenter, her name is Kat, I don't know how to pronounce the surname, Mahale, I think. She spoke very eloquently about her own personal experiences. and how photography had been in some ways therapy for her, and it helped her through some hard times, as a personally, not just hard times as an artist, but personal hard times. And so it was really interesting, and it was interesting to see as well. They'd asked the artists on the panel, they'd asked them for one of their photographs that was in the current curated exhibition set, and they asked the other artist to comment on them live in as part of the panel discussion. So they'd put a photo up on the screen that was taken by one of the artists, and then they give the microphone and it's like, okay, tell me, what does this make you feel? Which I can imagine must be really daunting to do that as a panel discussion in public, but it was really effective. It was really effective, though, to communicate the ideas behind it.
Interesting question about when one takes a picture, the moment that drives you to actually press the shutter button, you obviously have a feeling of that moment, however you do it, whether it's messy, formal, whatever composition, however you approach it, that motivation. Is that the same as presentation of that same image in terms of feeling? Even for the photographer themselves, when you look at it, it's very different.
Yes.
And the people who look at it may have a completely different feeling, deep feeling, about an image you took with a very different feeling. And that's a very interesting conversation, I think, between photographers and those who experience the prints and trying to figure out what that kind of blend, what that zone is, what that communication style is in terms of the emotion of.
For me, that's the essence of the whole photography thing, is the being able to anticipate what the recipient will go through when they look at the picture that you're taking at this moment. So for me, that anticipation, that's the thing that takes, I don't know, forever to learn and to get right, I think.
It's funny, I don't feel that when I take a picture.
You don't?
For me, I just connect with the
No, I'm not saying I do have that feeling. I'm not saying I have that feeling. I'm saying I can anticipate what might happen in the recipient. That's my goal, at least.
What would have been really interesting, but they didn't have time for, because these things are, time slots and what have you, when they're doing them in the show. So they did the up. So the artist who had made the image listened into the reaction, if you like, and it wasn't a first reaction, because this is a curated set. It's been, everybody had seen each other's photo. But what you didn't get the chance to do live in the moment was the dialogue between the artist and the viewers, because I would have loved to have. Not because I want the artist to stand up and have an artist tantrum and say, that's not what I meant at all, and storm off the stage, although that would have been amusing if it had happened. But just because it was that deeper moment, right? Because, people were sharing something personal. It was showing how the thing made them feel. And it would have been lovely to go and see all that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that may, maybe we do a podcast on photography, imagery, and emotion. I think that would be an interesting discussion. I think it's in the purview, of course, when we work in film with actors and trying to capture, especially from a director's point of view, where you have multiple actors and you're really focused on the intention of bringing out an emotive value that connects with the audience and that helps in character and story, etc. And one works hard at making sure that that's, in a way, invisible. So it's not what we would call indicating or anticipating or pushing. It's like sometimes you see a movie with a very bland scene and they're going, let's pump up the music so hard to like tell people that this is an important emotion scene. And yet you're there going like, God, it's bombastic.
Right? Tell people what they are supposed to feel.
That's
in that
right,
moment.
And so that's on something that would not work in film. And so we, one of the director's jobs is to kind of very delicately maneuver the emotional expression of the actors, and you do this with performance adjustment, you do this with cutting, you do this with your composition, and of course, music and sound effects and all of that to bring up or diminish what the eventual feeling is. But photographs have that same power. I mean, we can look at, you know, and I think we've talked about images over the course of history that shocked us or appalled us or warmed us, and even provoked social change. And so those are very, very important things. And I guess to rekindle the emotive value of taking a picture, being conscious of it, editing that picture, to what end, and ultimately what the experience of looking at that picture, and what is that experience of looking at that picture on your phone, online, on a computer, on a wall, on a billboard? Those are all very different experiences.
Absolutely. That's close to the conclusion of what I was going to say to this topic for me, was after seeing the panel discussion, I went back and found the exhibition as it was being displayed, terrible conditions, right? A noisy exhibition floor, horrible lighting, you know. But I went back and I thought, okay, I'm going to go back and do this. I'm going to go and look at this collection of photographs and attempt this. And because the surroundings were not exactly conducive, it was a bit tricky. But I was able to stop and consider and how these images made me feel in a way that I had seen them previously earlier in the day or whatever, or the day before, but I just went, oh yeah, fine, and walked past them and not really given them their due. And so actually it was a really good wake-up call for me as well, that, you know, it's worth putting the effort in, you know, to just explore how the photographs make feel and what they make think about stuff. But it's worth spending time with these images, you know. That was a good wake up call for me.
Awesome. Wonderful. Anything else from the photography show?
So one more thing, but it's not a big discussion it's not a big topic for discussion, but it's just a lot of fun. So there's a picture in our shared album of what probably looks to you both like a motorbike. And to be honest, at first glance, I was like, why have they brought a motorbike into the show floor? This doesn't make any sense. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. It doesn't seem to have an engine or anything like that. So this is called the Manfrotto Avenger, right? And I believe Avenger is actually a product that Manfrotto sells. It's like, I don't know, it's a line of C-stands or something like that. But this is a motorbike, like full-size motorbike that's made entirely out of Manfrotto grip.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that grips get together, drink a whole lot.
And that's how this came to be, right?
That's what it feels like to me. I could just see the grips on any number of shows that I do, you know, going like, I got an idea.
Yeah, I mean, so the spokes on the wheels, I think that, there were actual tires on this thing. Obviously, they're not, you know, Manfrotto products.
Not Manfrotto tires.
And the rim of the wheels, I'm not sure where they come from. But the spokes of the wheels are adjustable, you know, they're not magic arms, but they're adjustable arms of some sort. And then, you know, all the foot pedals are things like the handles from Super Clamps and stuff, and the handlebars and the brake, yeah, they're all different types of clamps. The headlights are the speedo for the
definitely
bike,
drunken grips.
Are the suckers that you get for when you put stuff on windows on glass? Yeah, the vacuum suckers. The forks are made out of C stands. There's just all sorts of goodies on this thing. Oh, if you look at the rear lights, Chris, they look like rear red lights on the back of this motorbike. But they're actually those funny, strange drilled red balls that Manfrotto sell. I've never figured out for the life. In all the years I've known of them as a product, I've never actually figured out what the hell they're for. But there's just all sorts of really, really fun stuff. And I thought, yeah, that's awesome. I spent ages looking at it. There's a little sign that by the bottom of it said, can you guess how many pieces of Manfrotto equipment have been used to make this bike?
Well, they certainly got some attention with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was really well. And it was really well done when you see it, like, you know, up close. It was horribly difficult to take a photo of because it's practically see-through because there's so many gaps in it. And the surrounding area was just so busy. The shot right. I've taken of it is absolutely horrendous, but it was the best angle I could find.
All right.
So that's a bit of fun.
That sounds like a bit of fun. So, the photography show coming up again next year, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be back to every year now. They haven't announced next year's one, but I'm imagining it will be in March. So they like the springtime for that show.
One of these days, I'll make it there. I kind of miss Photokina. You know, it's been I used to be there, and then it just disappeared one day, and it's like, okay.
So, maybe we should organize a TFOP something or
well, next year, Chris, in Berlin in May, there we will be doing at Kraftwerk there in Berlin. We'll be doing a very big AI show, inviting all manner of artists from all over the world.
I'll be there,
and it will be quite something. The first of its kind, really, like Freeze, you know, those art shows and whatnot. And it's being organized by friends of mine, and I'll be there.
That sounds a good one. Get the dates as soon as you can. I'll come over for that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, be really fun.
Sounds cool. Okay, so let's move on to the picks of the week. I brought us one. The thing I talked about earlier. I have to switch.
That's the Manfrotto bike again. That's
browser. Here we go. The Canon satellite. Okay, so this is a thing that I came across just a few days ago. And Canon has already launched their second micro satellite into space. And this one is there for taking pictures of our planet and some pictures of space. They have a PowerShot 110 on it for wide angle stuff, and an R5 with a telescope for pictures of the Earth. And that thing just started sending pictures back to Earth. So
did it launch from a large spaceship? Or was it one of these micro satellites that you literally toss out of a
No. I don't know exactly, but there's like SpaceX, for example, does these what they call rideshare missions where they have like 20, 30 or more microsatellites on board and release them up there. So possibly one of those, because that's relatively affordable to what it would have cost, I don't know, 20 years ago. So
that's why I ask. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's probably one of those. And I don't know. It just feels, I don't know exactly why they're doing this, but of course they get visibility. They get to show that their stuff works, like their consumer stuff works in space. Maybe there's a bit of Hasselblad envy from 50 years ago, possibly. So
it's a good time, I think, for camera manufacturers to think about space. I mean, we are going back to the moon in a few years, aren't we, and stuff like that. So.
Oh, and there's plenty of projects of Earth observation stuff up there now by private companies doing, like, I don't know, watching climate-related things and so on. So, yeah, I think that might be an interesting market, possibly. All right, Adrian, you brought us a camera.
I did a vintage digital camera, right? My pick of the week today is the Olympus Penlight EPL3. First released, I think, in 2011. At least that's the date I found on DP Review. And why, you might ask, is this my pick of the week? Well, it's my pick of the week because I've just been gifted one.
No, really?
I have. My father-in-law just gave me this. It was one that he's had, I think, since they were first new, but hasn't used in many years. He said, I keep meaning to give you this. So I now have an Olympus EPL. EPL3. I've been really intrigued about buying a Micro Four Thirds camera for some time. You'll know, of course, that I really love my Olympus Tough camera, and I really love the art filter, the grainy black and white art filter in that. But of course, the thing that camera finds very challenging is it's got a very small sensor, whereas this camera has a Micro Four Thirds sensor and has the grainy black and white art filter. So I am intrigued to see what I can do here, whether it's really old fashioned image quality because it's 13 years old at this point, or is it going to take my graphic photography to a new level?
The specs don't look too bad. I mean, it has 12 megapixels, seems to have a decently fast autofocus.
Yeah.
It shoots 1080 movies. So
yeah, I probably won't use it for that, to be honest.
The iPhone is better.
Yeah, the iPhone 4 is probably better, but yeah.
All right. Thank you. And last but not least, Jeremiah, you brought us a region
Another
project.
Inspiration, a photographer, Catherine Opie. She's a favorite and well worth just investigating her work. It's lyrical, beautiful, well-considered, worth a deep dive, both her social photography and her landscape. There's a big show here going on, has been, Reagan Project. She's a dazzler, really, really great photographer, and one that I just thought if people are not aware of her, they should be.
The photos on this website also show very, very clearly how the room around exhibitions influences your perception of it, because this looks like, sure, her photography looks like photography that needs space, and it's getting space there. So,
yeah, though her work, I have a book on her or by her, and again, the images have a beautiful, provocative air to it. They make you feel something. Again, worth a dive.
Very good.
That's good.
I'm very intrigued about the presentation here, the surroundings.
Yeah.
Anyway, very cool. Thank you very much, gentlemen. So, Canon VR, felt photography, still misleading title for me.
It is a bit, yeah. Like
I thought it would be like those Instagram posts of people.
It's Etsy product shop,
out of felt,
right?
And
I thought it could, but when you dive into it, well worth understanding and giving a go.
All right, so definitely. That was it. I'll try to find my tripods and things and see if I can build a little tricycle or something of them.
Build a TFOP robot, Chris. That's
the
what
TFOP robot. Yeah, I'll do my best. So this was it for this week's episode. We'll be back soon with more. Until then, you can find us at thefuturephotography.com. See you guys soon. Take care and bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Future of Photography. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your other podcasts. Find the show notes and more information at thefutureofphotography.com.